This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Spring is near, and that means summer sports leagues will be out in full force. This year, take the hassle out of captain duties and use TeamSnap. Manage your team on the go, post schedules, updates, and keep track of stats with TeamSnap's mobile app. Get started today at teamsnap.kandpshow.com. Again, that's teamsnap.kandpshow.com. TeamSnap, the smartest and easier way to manage your team this season. Welcome, everybody, to the KMP Show. I am your host, Jonathan Playtech, and with me, as always, is my good friend, Mr. Rich Kraich. And by the way, this is episode 34, because I checked.
Nice.
Oh, crap. No,
what's
it's 30.
It
yes, it's 34. Damn it. I think I mislabeled a recording, but it's okay.
Well, that's all right. No one will know until now when you mention it.
No, I got to check now, because it's going to bother me.
Okay.
It's going to really,
one of these days
really, it's going to bother me, and I can't find the file. Where is it? Okay. Episodes.
I think that's correct.
Yes, it's 34.
Okay, it's well, there 34. You go. Of course.
Of course. I'll just edit that out in post. Hello, sir.
Hi. All right. Is this our first time talking now tonight?
Hello, sir. We need to, so we're going to speed this up. So we're going to cut out intentional walks, and that will fix everything. We're going to speed up the
get rid of those 20 seconds. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if we can get rid of this stupid banter that we have before the show, just 20, 30 seconds, we're good. And then the show will be a nice compact, two and a half, three hours is about what we're going
for, once we trim the fat, we can get really down into the breaking down of X's and O's.
If you really want to trim the fat of the show, it just wouldn't exist.
No, because this show is all pork.
You just delete the
show immediately. It's just us just talking about a whole bunch of nothing and having a good time doing it. Hopefully you're having a good time listening. But if you want to listen, we're now on iTunes, and there's a great easy way to check out the show on iTunes. Just go to itunes.kandpshow.com. That's it. itunes.kandpshow.com. You got your iPhone. You got your everything synced with Apple devices. You've got the vertical integration of your mobile devices via Apple or iTunes. Go to itunes.kandpshow.com. Subscribe. Leave a rating if you please. A review. I think they still allow you to do that. Right? Don't they? You can write a little something.
Oh, of course. Oh, like,
these guys suck, but it's pretty good. It's better than.
And you absolutely should do that. We've had many people that did do it when we first started the show. And it's kind of tailed off a little bit. And I know we've sort of done less episodes as well because of, life gets in the way and the holidays and all that sort of stuff. But birthdays and all this sort of crap coming up. But
happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah.
Happy birthday to Rich. You don't want to talk about it. Was it bad?
No.
It's a big 3-0, isn't it?
Yeah.
Was that special at all? Did you?
I woke up and my neck like just hurt, and it's like still hurts now. And it's like a week ago. I'm like, now why am I so sore?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't do anything. Like, I did nothing. Like, and I played basketball like a few days prior, and I wasn't sore that day. And then I, go to bed. I wake up and I'm 30, and then my neck's sore. And it's been sore every second, and I can't get rid of it. Like, it's ridiculous. What the hell? Age is only a number, but in this case, it really
right. It's a number how bad you hurt the next day
right,
after
my
doing
life.
Stuff.
Yeah. It's just ridiculous. But no, we definitely would appreciate it if you go on there right now, itunes.kandpshow.com, and leave a rating and review because we go up on the charts. Everybody gets to see us. More people listen.
And then they stop listening, but they listen that one time.
And that's all we want, really.
Right.
It's just that one-time peak view, and then we could sell that number to an advertiser. But, hey, look, on this show, we had this. Like, what about the next show? Who cares?
We're down there in the fights competing with, in the rungs, competing with Dino Costa now. He's back in the game, so... Mr. Women Have No Place in Sports Talk Radio is coming for our digital viewers. That's that guy, by the way. That's Dino Costa.
Oh, that's that. Okay, we talked.
Yeah, we talked about
him.
He was like, he was the guy who was like, "There's women have no place in sports talk radio." Like, oh, well, okay.
Like, can they not listen either? Like,
I
can't do anything.
I don't know.
Like, he just like, don't even listen to me. Don't even.
You know what? That's a good question. I think he meant hosting.
Go away.
I think he meant hosting. But I could be wrong.
He probably doesn't take many calls from women. I know that when he does, he gets very angry.
Yeah, probably not. It probably doesn't do very well. But
probably makes like hacky like TV in the kitchen jokes too and stuff, just like terrible ass. Like, okay, all right,
like, like, oh, your husband let you learn how to drive,
in your kitchen. Like, it's like, what are you?
Well,
like, these jokes aren't even funny. They're not being funny in like 1983.
Yeah.
Like,
well, there's another person that got in trouble for making jokes. I told you about it last night, and today the Chicago Blackhawks and Artemi Panarin had to come out and apologize for comments that Panarin made to, I believe he was still in the KHL at the time. He was interviewed as part of some, I don't know, what passes for the internet over in Russia. I don't know what they have. I'm not Russian, but I think they have the internet. Do they have the internet in Russia?
I would guess they do have the internet, but the election, I cannot confirm that. So, because they hack our internet to get the internet. So, yeah.
They steal our Wi-Fi. That's how Russia gets on the internet, is they steal our Wi-Fi. Or Europe's Wi-Fi, you know, depending, because they span, because, you know, Russia, long country, a big long country, wraps around the globe. They can steal Russia's internet, or Europe's internet on the one end, and then Asia slash America's internet on the other, slash...
Steal some Mongolian internet. Hot Mongolian internet. Yeah.
You think there's Mongolian internet porn?
I bet.
Right?
Oh, porn. Oh,
porn. Yeah, like they have their own production houses producing pornography for the Mongolian.
I gotta imagine. I mean, that's gotta be a big business. Ever.
Pornography, right? Pornography?
Yeah.
It's like almost as old as, they say the oldest profession is prostitution. The second oldest profession has to be porn producer. Mm-hmm. Right, like, hey, you know, I see you turning tricks out there for that goat. How about I write down what you do? I draw this picture of you doing it, and then you give me that goat's milk. How about that? So, porn producer, second oldest profession in the nation.
We'll have to double check.
I think so. Yeah, we'll fact check. Submit it to Politico.
Maybe farmer. I don't know. Maybe farmer might be older, but if we count farmer as a
given,
I do not. As I wish, I do not.
You do not? Absolutely. Not a fan of the American farmer. Good luck running on that platform, my friend. Right. The American farmer. What do? They don't do any of the work.
Not anymore.
The earth does it. It's automated.
Right.
And then John Deere, like, you don't even own the John Deere thing that you buy because you have to call John Deere to have it serviced. And then you don't even own the corn that you buy, or the corn seed that you buy, because Monsanto owns that. You just lease it from them or license it.
See?
Yeah. See? So it's basically, you're basically just a middleman.
So I'm going to run it.
Yeah. There you go. Just a big, gigantic middle finger to the American farmer right there. I think that explains why Hillary lost the election. He made some comments to a Russian internet hockey show. He was asked, what is one thing you cannot do? And this is the English translation of the Russian. And he said, have sex with a black woman. And, there's been much ado about whether he was joking or not. And I don't really care if he was joking or not. It just seems, it was stupid to say. Rich, would you agree about that? That,
yeah, that's,
even for a Russian guy, even at the time, 20 years old, he grew up in a coal mining town. He was closer to the Kazakhstani capital than he was Moscow. But I think it's silly, you know, for anybody to say things like that. It's silly. We can perfectly apply modern social mores to that. But I think it's also, I think you also have to kind of consider the context of who said it and where he's coming from. Not, which is not to say that he has a point. That's not what I mean. It's that he was a 20-year-old punk kid from a rural area of Russia who had probably not experienced many other cultures at that point in his life. And even if he had experienced those cultures, who's to say what Russian culture says about those other cultures, if that makes any sense? I mean, it may seem like a subtle excuse making, but if you grow up in rural Russia and your Russian grandparents who helped raise him and introduce him to hockey, and his parents are all telling him about the evils of cultures that are non-ethnic Russian, you know, what is he going to free associate with something he can't do? I think that's an avenue.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, we sort of take for granted a lot, and this is kind of a heavy topic to start off.
Yeah, kind of went there.
Be a fun show or whatever. There. But it's because this does come up pretty often, and I think one of the things to, and of course, neither of us are saying it's right.
No.
It's pretty awful what he said. But I think a lot of times we take for granted that I'm assuming a majority of the people listening to this show grew up in well educated, well established, well, you know, integrated areas, and that to us that's horrifying. But you know, to a guy who has never, ever interacted with you know, anybody of any other race. Mm-hmm. I mean, rural Russia, there's not
he's
many,
more likely
you know,
to see an Asian than he is a black person, probably.
Right. He's not seeing, yeah, there's not many Latinos rocking around, you know, rural Russia or mm-hmm. whatever. So, like, we sort of, you know, take for granted what we grew up with, and we grew up with the ability to know right and, you know, that's right or wrong, and to know, you know, what other cultures are like, and interact with other cultures, and interact with other people, and interact with other races or whatever. We sort of took for granted that a lot of people didn't, and that doesn't necessarily make them, you know, a garbage person mm-hmm. or whatever, because they said that, but just an idea of like, it's not the great thing to say. And I think he knows now, and I'm sure he's smarter now than he was back then, because now he is, you know, in a country, and now he is, you know, working for a country and in a league where mm-hmm. he deals with people of other races and other ethnicities and other things.
And
like that.
And so, to his credit, he came out with an apology that was an actual apology and not the standard athlete non-apology apology. The I'm sorry if I, you know, the standard, the Curt Schilling apology is usually what athletes go for, which is the I'm sorry if anybody was offended by me keeping it real. But right. he said,
sorry that you can't handle the truth.
Right. He said, what I said was offensive, and I'm sorry for that. And it seemed to be a moment of clarity where it was like, yeah, I understand what I did, and it was wrong, and I apologize. And it was succinct, and it was clear, and I see no reason to belabor the point. It was just interesting that something from so long ago, from such a weird culture, or from such a different culture, at times isolationist culture, could be so, there were so many people so outraged about it. When we see people like, because you remember when Pedro showed up, when he was showing up at cockfights after the Mike, in the aftermath of the Michael Vick arrest and trial, Pedro Martinez showed up at a cockfight in, I believe, Central America somewhere. And at the time, many people were outraged by it, but the correct attenuation of that outrage was, well, he's from a vastly different culture. And while we see that now as wrong, that's never been introduced to him, and he's grown up with it a lot. So it's just a, I don't know, news topic of the day. But we got to speed up the show because the MLB has introduced a new speed up rule. And this year, starting in 2017, managers will no longer have their pitchers throw four balls in order to get issue an intentional pass. They can simply signal from the dugout, say, hey, Mr. Umpire Man, send that guy to first base, and nothing will change.
It's interesting. And yeah, I guess this is kind of our largest topic that we wanted to do here is of course, with pace of play and Rob Manfred, the Major League Baseball commissioner. This is one of his big things. I mean, he took over for Bud Selig a few years ago, and little by little, he was kind of like, yeah, you know, here's some ideas we have. And now he's been full steam ahead lately. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be even more full steam ahead, because I don't know if you saw this, but there's some weird language in like his contract or the rules where like next year he can just unilaterally like make changes and nobody can stop.
Really?
Did you see?
No.
Yeah. So he's got somewhere like there's like checks and balances now, but for whatever reason, he's got like this period for like next year. And I'll have to look up the exact ruling of it. Maybe we can talk about another show where like he can just say that that's the rule change, and like it just has to be agreed upon by everybody. It's really weird. So it'll be interesting to see what next year does. And maybe
like if
be
he gets drunk.
Where,
he just starts making
unpopular
decisions. Yeah,
or like, I mean, this could be, and the part of that might be the no, we're going to put the DH in the NL thing, and you guys aren't going to say anything about it. I wonder if that is something, because he's been very quiet about that. He was big about it when he first came in, and then everybody was like, oh, yeah, and he kind of was like, oh, yeah, I don't know if that's going to happen or whatever, but now there's this weird thing where next year he can kind of just let any rule that he wants go through. Mm. And, I mean, I could see that as being something he definitely wants to do. Then again, he is, as the commissioner, the owner's puppet in a way, and I don't know that the owners really want to pay one other person on the field a bunch of money, you know.
Right, because the spot that would be occupied by a DH, the DH, you know, his position in the NL now goes to a third backup catcher, or maybe
exactly.
Short, long relief bust.
Yeah, exactly. So certainly, your third catcher, your backup, fourth or fifth outfielder, you know, your last bullpen guy on the bench or whatever, you know, those sort of guys go in versus it being, you know, a big bopper DH dude, you know, that, like, that guy's going to command a lot more money. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if he does that. But when you talk about these pace of play rules and some other things, might not be a bad idea to get another hitter in there. But yeah, no, as you mentioned, the automatic intentional walk. Also touched on Manfred said a few things of redefining the strike zone or redoing it or enforcing the strike zone a little bit more, you know, raising it up a little bit because a lot of guys are getting these low strikes and umpires are calling it, maybe moving it up a little bit. But in general, John, and I kind of want to ask you this, because I know, you know, the big topic we're going to talk about here is the intentional walk. I mean, everybody goes, okay, cool. You know, no longer do you have to throw the four pitches, da, da, da. But what do you, is that really solving any problem? Is that really doing anything?
I don't think so, because it's just so infrequent, the intentional walk. And I didn't know, because originally I thought, well, okay, that's a good middle ground. It's not a pitch clock, which the MLBPA has been fighting. Maybe on first blush, I thought maybe there is something to this. And then I realized MLB teams just don't intentionally walk at people anymore with the frequency, at least that they used to, even 5 years ago. The rate of the number of intentional walks issued by teams all throughout MLB have decreased by 25% over the last 5 years, from a little over 1,200 to now just under 950 intentional passes issued in 2016. And over the course of a season, that computes out to 0.38 intentional walks per game. So you are not even, you're not even, whatever you want to assume an intentional walk takes, you're taking a fraction of that out of any given MLB game. And it, when you view it in that context, it just doesn't do anything. It doesn't change anything about the game. You or I, who want to sit down and spend and are willing to spend 2 to 2.5 hours to watch a baseball game, but not 3, 3.5 hours, we're not going to notice a difference. Nobody, that the discerning fan, isn't going to be able to notice a difference. It's only over the season that you save a minimal amount of time. It really does nothing. And it's surprising that the MLB is touting this as something, we've done something to speed up the game, when it so clearly just isn't. It's just nothing.
Yeah. Well, and I see this a lot. Very similar to how the NFL does with concussions or whatever, of like, oh, well, now we have this, and now we have this thing, and now we've added this, and now guys have to do this, and then there's this protocol. And it's like, yeah, none of that really, it ignores the larger issue. And I think the larger issue is that you can add, you know, okay, no more intentional walks, pitch clock. I mean, they did a commercial thing where they have to come back quick from the commercials, and they have to do this sort of thing. And a lot of people's arguments about pace of play and sort of that buzzword that keeps getting used is, it's not necessarily how long the baseball game is, because it's long, but it's always kind of been pretty long. It's a long game. Like, that's something that you kind of deal with. A lot of people's complaints, though, and I think this is the problem that MLB doesn't want to confront, because it completely changes how the fundamental part of the game is. The game itself, you can't speed up some of the things that happen in the game. You can't make things just happen in the game. Baseball, just sometimes just nothing happens. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes guys just strike out, and some guys walk, and some guys got. But there's things that are going on in recent history of the baseball that are sort of, at least in the MLB level, are contributing to this longer, slower game where not much is happening. And that's really the big thing, is that the action of the game, the actual game action, is less than it's ever been. Strikeouts and walks are on the rise. You're seeing a lot of guys sitting there taking pitches, walking to first base. People have realized that that's a very good way to win baseball games, so every team does it now, and now, you know, that's what it is. It's like, well, I want to win, so I'm going to take a bunch of walks, and, you know, I don't care if we strike out, because, you know, I don't see it as that big of a deal. I'd rather, you know, my guy take a pitch and get a walk than, you know, swing at something he doesn't want to and ground out. It's more, you know, much more beneficial to just take the walk. Shifts, I mean, batting average of balls in play is plummeting, because now shifts are so prevalent that teams know where these guys are going. You mentioned about the intentional walk. That's probably a big reason why the intentional walk is going away, because a really good hitter, you have a better chance against a really, really good hitter now, because here's where he always hits it. Let's just stand here and see what happens. You know, and you got those guys. So shifts have really destroyed that. Home runs have risen, but, you know, non-home run hits are continuing to be depressed. You know, your doubles, your triples, even your singles or whatever are just down a lot, where homers, you know, over the last 2 years have risen. But again, it's you know, strikeout walk homer is pretty
are
much
we trending
what,
to that
the game of baseball
is that we is that what the yeah, larger data I mean, says is that we are trending to the one of three outcome style of
and
play.
I think we're there. Yeah, we're there, really. And that's, you know, that's an issue. And then there's also the problem too of the bullpens have gotten so good, and people understand so much the use of bullpens now. And so often pitchers now have just honed that craft, where now everyone's bullpen has a bunch of dudes that throw 95 and get outs all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you don't have that, like, I remember when I was growing up, there was like, you would bring out a guy in a bullpen. I was like, oh no, here we go.
Right.
Like, you know, once your starter was gone, I was like, oh God,
like, just please get to the closer. Just please. The closer right. was the only really good bullpen
right,
pitcher.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's how, when we grew up, that was that way. You know, the closer was your one good reliever. And then the rest of the bullpen was just a bunch of really shitty dudes that couldn't
hang. Don't you hate
starters
on Rod Beck, my friend.
Right. Exactly. Well, he was a closer. He was a closer. Yeah, but then you had those guys, now you don't. Now you have a bunch of guys. I mean, look at the Baltimore Orioles last year. You had Zach Britton, who was, of course, incredible as a closer. But the rest of their bullpen was just a bunch of dudes that threw 95 and got you out. And, like, that becomes a problem now, because people will go to their bullpen after five or six innings. It's, you know, this continual flood of five or six dudes that can throw 95 and get you out. And then it's over. And so you're just, you're not getting many runs scored after the, you know, fifth or sixth inning. You're not getting a ton of hits throughout the game. You're getting a lot of strikeouts, a lot of walks. And, yeah, you're getting home runs, but between those home runs, nothing is happening. So that's a bigger issue, really, I think, is the action of a game and what's going on during the context of the game. Not necessarily the, oh, let's shave 4 minutes off the game. Okay, everything's solved. Mm-hmm. Like, that doesn't do anything.
You know what? I see your argument, and I would agree that I would be more willing to watch 3 hours of sports content if there was more going on, because a typical NFL broadcast is right around 3 hours, isn't it? Somewhere
right,
around
yeah.
there. And there's just so much downtime. There's so much that just isn't happening on the field. But when the game is played, stuff is happening. In baseball, you can watch baseball being played and be lulled into, many people can be lulled into almost a sleep-like state when you're just watching guys work the count, pitching change, okay, this guy strikes out, and then another walk, and then nothing really happens until somebody hits a double, or you know, somebody gives up a home run, or somebody gets hit by a pitch, or all of a sudden it's bases loaded, then it becomes an interesting watch. Other sports are different in that stuff is always happening. Baseball, not so much. There are only a few things in baseball that are uniquely and universally attention grabbing and attention centering. And I agree with that. I just, you know, I think there may be a little bit something to shortening the game just a little bit more to the guys, you know, Aledmys Diaz or whoever's walking around, adjusting their belt, adjusting their cap. David Price takes forever to throw from one pitch to the next. And I think that moving forward, as you move a game forward, as the game enters a more digital space, as more people cut cords, as more people are trying to consume the game via their mobile data applications, that the game kind of limit those lulls in the play. Would you agree?
Yeah, I do. I do wonder, though, a little bit of, and this is kind of a point aside, but you know, you talk about the NFL and the action going on in those games too, and a problem with it too, and I know you'll probably address this as well, is that I think if baseball happened as infrequently as the NFL happened, or as infrequently as the NBA or whatever, and you wouldn't necessarily care that it was 3 hours. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm sitting down for, and that's the argument that people make for football. You know, okay, it's one day during the week or whatever, and unfortunately, the NFL has not realized that, you know, having games on every day is not a good idea, because people just enjoy saying, okay, I can be really lazy on this day, and you know, maybe the day after, but that's it. The rest of the, you know, I gotta do some other stuff the other days. Where baseball, because it's the 162, because it's every day, because it's all of the summer, that it just becomes overwhelming to that point where it's just like, oh, okay, let's go. But I do wonder if there's also just a grouping of fans, and maybe the NFL or MLB rather just has to realize that there's gonna be fans that just don't really like the pace of MLB, and they don't know if they can necessarily change a whole lot about that. That would be sort of my argument, but I know that you have some potential fixes as well.
I mean, I like your idea. I mean, I had never heard of that. the idea behind, I guess it wouldn't be lowering the strike zone, it'd be raising the strike zone, is that you get more pitchers trying to pitch guys where they can hit the ball harder. You're forcing pitchers into a zone where it's more dangerous. Whereas right now, if you're at the knees of a hitter, it's pretty hard to hit a 95 mile an hour cutter that's at your knees. It's pretty hard to hit that. But if the pitcher was forced to, on the low end of the zone, hit, say, above your knees or towards the middle of your thigh, then you can still generate more power there. Your hands are, the bat head is quicker through the zone there than it is at the bottom of this, what is now the strike zone. So I really like that. But one thing that struck out to me when I was thinking about hastening the game, if they're without really changing it, because I'm a fan of, come out ready to pitch. I don't care how many pitching changes there are, but your guy better come out ready to play. And what some blowback to that would, of course, be, well, the mound in the bullpen and the mound on the field are different. And it's imperative that a pitcher feel comfortable being able to throw the mound from the game mound, because if only for player safety, because he's throwing 95 miles an hour. But one thing I thought of when I was looking around, trying to find a spot in the game where players are just slow and there's no reason for it, even foregoing between pitches, because between pitches, you've got the guys saying that their ritual is what matters and the pitchers, gripping the ball, pre-grip, getting the signs, whatever. I thought, what about guys walking up to the plate in between outs, not pitches, in between outs, get guys up to the plate quicker? Because there's videos. I found a video of Kyle Schwarber walking up to Thuggish Ruggish Bone, which I give him credit for, which I like.
Which is an incredible.
I appreciate it. But while I will enjoy 40 seconds of Thuggish Ruggish Bone by Bone Thugs and Harmony, it really slows the game down. 40 seconds to go from out to the guy getting ready to take the pitch, the next pitch of the next at bat, is way too much. And if we, I did some crude math, and if we assume that the average is 30 seconds, not 40, 30 seconds between out to first pitch of next at bat. Again, this isn't pace. We're not talking about plate appearances or time between pitches. I'm talking about the time between an out and the first pitch of the next plate appearance.
Right, you're not changing anything fundamental about the game. I mean, it's everybody's still doing everything that they would normally do. You're just kind of
just get up there,
kicking them in the ass a little bit. Yeah,
right. Just get up there in 18 seconds. Get up there in 20 seconds instead of 30. And usually it's probably a lot more than that. Get up there in 20 seconds. That's plenty of time to you to go up there, dig your hole halfway to China, adjust your cup, and then get ready to swing at the next pitch. And I think if there was maybe not a clock, maybe hand umpires the power to do it, maybe give them a watch or a stopwatch with which they can clock it to kind of, nudge guys like, all right, come on, get in the box. Because the one, I think that's a prime area to find a lot of unused time that if you reduce it, you don't really run the risk of affecting anybody's performance. And the real interesting part about all this is that the umpires have a lot of power to already hasten the pace of the game. They just don't do it, right? Because they can say there is in the MLB rule book the 12-second rule. They don't enforce it. They can start assessing balls and strikes depending on who's loafing about, the pitcher or the batter. They can start assessing balls and strikes if guys take between 12 seconds in between pitches. They don't. They can start not granting time out to every little thing because, oh, my signs are mixed up, or, oh, I want to change the signs. No, screw you. Let's play. Let's go. There are so many timeouts in any given baseball game, and it is completely, completely at the discretion of the umpires to grant those timeouts. They just never really enforce their ability not to. So I think if you're going to look anywhere to make the game faster, that's where you go, is you tell the umpires, hey, stop granting, time out. Stop letting the catcher run out to talk to his pitcher so often, right? There's plenty of places to go about doing it.
Yeah.
But Rich, the other thing I saw that you showed me was that the game itself is becoming more and more actionless. Again, getting back to the idea that it's not just about the length of the game. It's about the difference in time between action. You posted a chart here that has to do with the amount of time in between balls in play, and we're at the longest that has ever been since when? Since World War II. That's incredible. Can you tell us more about this?
Yeah, yeah. So this is, I think Tom Verducci put this, it was an SI.com article that he put in there, and it's basically just about, and I'll kind of give a counter to this as well, but it's average time in seconds between balls in play. We were at 205.2 last year. So here's kind of some other facts that he put in this article. A ball gets put into play once every 3 minutes and 25.2 seconds in today's game. That's an additional 23.4 seconds of wait time in just 10 years, a 30% increase. After a relatively flat period, this is, you know, other stuff kind of goes into the chart, but here's some other ones too. There are 9,287 fewer balls in play last year than just 10 years ago. The ball is not in play for 30.8% of plate appearances, up from 27.1 just 10 years ago and 22.8 40 years ago.
Wow.
So then since 1976, the average game has six fewer balls in play but takes 31 minutes longer. And since the live ball era began in 1920, the three pitching staffs that allowed the fewest balls in play in any full season occurred last year. Every single one of them in that order, the Cubs, the Dodgers, and the Nationals.
Wow, so 80 years.
Yeah, and we saw this
the
year,
fewest balls in
last
play.
Year, three of the top, yeah, from those three. But I think one of the other issues with this, too, and kind of the devil's advocate of that is, okay, yeah, you can heighten the strike zone and get some more balls in play and get some more hits and get more stuff like that. That's not going to make the game go any shorter, though.
Right.
You know, a bunch of dudes getting hits all over the place and guys on base and things happening. And in that case, you're probably going to go to your bullpen a lot more. And there'll be more bullpen guys coming up if you know, your starter gives up 10 runs because, you know, he can only throw down the middle of the plate and guys are just eating him alive or whatever. That's going to become another issue as well. And then that is sort of the other argument of, okay, sure, now there's more action going on, but the games are longer. So it's again, what do we want to do here? Do we want to make it a faster game, a game that's over quicker, or do we want to make it a more action game? I don't know that you can do both. That's going to be the problem.
What would you like?
Nobody's going to face.
What would you like? Would you want more action? Because I know you're nothing if not a man who loves a good pitching duel. You like that. So would you enjoy seeing more of the game as it is now, where there can be there is a longer time in between balls in play, not necessarily because the game is longer, but also because we've gotten better at the art of pitching, and I mean the art of throwing 97 miles an hour. But would you enjoy watching more pitching related outs than you would, say, fly ball outs or line drive outs or ground ball outs? What would you like more? Uh-oh, we may have lost him. He's gone. We've lost him again. That's three shows. Three damn shows where this service has crapped out. Well, that's what you get. You get what you pay for, and you pay for nothing, and you get this kind of shoddy service. We'll be right back on the KMP show as we reconnoiter with Mr. Krejci. We'll be right back. Yeah, we're back on the KMP show. Apologize once again for that. Hey, this is a
wah-wah,
but hey, you know what? This is as good a time as any to tell you about Ticket Network. We're talking about baseball.
You're going to throw a
yeah,
and
I am.
Read into the yes.
Damn
hell
right
yes.
I am, baby, paying those bills.
I love it.
The crack of that bat has pumped us up for the coming MLB season. And this year, the number one place to get tickets to your favorite team is ticketnetwork.kandpshow.com. Ticket Network has the tickets where you want them, when you want them, at the best prices available. Whether getting ready for the MLB season or looking to score NBA or NHL playoff tickets, Ticket Network is your number one stop. Use our exclusive link right now. Bookmark this, ticketnetwork.kandpshow.com. That's ticketnetwork.kandpshow.com. We thank you for supporting the show. When we left off, Rich, I asked you, we were talking about what would you like in terms of the different styles of play? Would you like a pitching matchup, if we'll call it that, or a game that derives more of its outs from offense, from balls being put into play? What do you like to watch more?
Yeah, to me, I like a game where there's a little bit more balls in play, but I understand that might be a little trickier to do. For me, I'd maybe raise the strike zone a little bit, because we're seeing a lot of those lower, you know, strikes being called and a lot of that stuff. We've talked about this before, but I'm all in on robot umps as well, because you know, modern umpires cannot call that low strike. And they can't deal, you know, there's a whole art to fooling the pitch framing now has become such a thing. And when you put it to its core, it's let's fool this idiot behind the plate. Like, I'm very good at making this idiot behind the plate get the call wrong all the time.
That's right. That is exactly
what
it's about.
Is, yeah. Which, and we're developing guys as like, oh, you're really good at making that asshole look like an idiot. Perfect. Let's get you in here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's all it is. So robot umps, because there'd be so few, so many less of those low strikes called.
Right.
And that'd be good. I think it would let people have a little more
confidence. Yeah, but you're taking the food out of Francisco Cervelli's mouth, my friend. I mean,
I know. I'm sorry, Francisco. I'm sorry. Well, yeah, sorry.
Sorry, not sorry, but come on, buddy.
He knows that's his goal. I mean, if that's what you want, if you want part of the game to be a fundamental part of the game, be you fool this idiot behind the plate, then that's fine with me. I don't care. To me, I don't need that. It doesn't really do much for me. So I do that. I thought your idea of kind of speeding up those sort of things, of mound visits, speeding those up, the timeouts, get in the box, you know, next guy's out, you're up there, move, you know, stuff like that, I think would definitely increase it. That's not going to, you know, make a fundamental difference in the game, but I think it will add a few minutes here and there. I think that's important. And one of the things I've heard a lot from a few people as well is something with the bullpen where, you know, we've gotten so used to the specialized bullpen or whatever, where you know, in a given inning, you could have three guys come out there. You could have, you know, if there's a lefty, righty, lefty in the lineup, you could literally put a lefty, you know, specialist, a righty specialist, and then a lefty all in one inning. We've seen that where some guys throw a pitch and they're done. They hit the showers. The next guy comes out, he throws his 10 warm-up pitches. We go to commercial. That guy throws his pitch. He gets taken out. The you know, the manager does his really slow, annoyingly slow crawl to the pitcher's
right. They
mound.
Do the mound visit to let the other guy get
grab
up.
My gum and spit it, and I'm looking under the bugout. I'm looking this. I'm, you know, shaking my head like that shit. Like, we don't need that. let's just like let's have a signal where it says, "All right, new guy in. Let's do that." If you want to do that, but some people's idea, and I like this one as well, is that if you bring a guy in from the bullpen, he's got to face more than one guy. He's got to face at least two guys. Maybe you can make it he has to face three guys. Just something where you can get rid of this idea that, like, you can have six dudes come in for six batters or whatever, that you can have you know, four guys even for six. That sort of stuff, that adds up, especially in the, you know, when you're talking about later in the game as well, because that's when I think the game really drags. I don't think the beginning of the game ever drags. But, man, the sixth, seventh, and eighth innings, those suck. Those are boring as hell because it's just a parade of bullpen dudes or whatever, and that's... You know, maybe then you say, no, this guy has to face at least two guys. No, this guy has to face at least three. I think that could do a real, because that's where you get a lot of downtime, too. It's not necessarily fundamentally changing how the game is played once it starts, but the manager walking out, the guy walking in from the bullpen, the guy taking his 10 warm-up pitches, the catcher throwing it to second.
Yeah.
To, you know, that's, that stuff is like, let's go.
You're
let's,
on
you know,
to
we
something,
don't need
my friend.
That.
I like
so that's,
that.
That's a big part of the game. And that does change the game a little bit, but... You know, specialized bullpens weren't even a thing 30 years ago. So everybody can say, oh, my God, no, you're ruining the game. It's like, this stuff didn't exist 30 years ago.
Right. This is a recent advent of statistical analysis.
You're not going to have grandpas that are like, oh, darn it. Like, this is
like, oh, man, I loved the loogie. I needed my loogie.
Like, only we would like the loogie. And I don't really care to like the loogie. I don't care that much.
No.
I got shit to do. Loogie be damned. I got to beat traffic. I got to get home.
Right. Right. And well, and we're seeing other people kind of challenge that mode of the hyper specialized. We're seeing guys like Cleveland's Andrew Miller come in for two and a half, three innings, like get through those higher leverage innings in the sixth, seventh, eighth, get us through that so that I can get us to our closer. There are some guys who are willing to bring in middle relief or higher leverage relief, we'll call it, and use them for an extended period of time. There are people that are even challenging in the new MLB, the new MLB way of hyper-specialized relievers. There's now been a kind of renaissance where you've got players or managers, that is, using their bullpen arms in a completely new way. It's just that Terry Francona also does the hyper-specialized crap. He does the hyper-specialized crap, including using the big 6'7" left-hander to go two and a half innings. So it's, you know, I would like it. I really like that, limiting it. And yeah, it changes it a little bit, but at the end of the day, and I don't want to be unnecessarily challenging people. I don't want to be unnecessarily caustic, but you know what? They're selling a product here. And I'm a consumer of that product, and so is everybody else who complains about how damn long and how damn dragging these games are. And their criticisms and their critiques and their wants are just as valid as everybody else, as the staunch baseball purist who doesn't even like the DH in the AL. the person who says, you know what, I want to be able to watch a condensed version of 45 minutes on my phone and not have to sift through, you know, 3 hours, 3.5 hours of game time for a game in August against, you know, two middling NL Central teams. I want to be able to sit down for two and a half hours. Those people's complaints are legitimate. And I think MLB would be best served to try to find a way to make those people happy. Maybe not give them everything they want, right? Because give them everything they want, games would take in a, you know, everybody in MLB would be Mark Burley. Remember those Mark Burley games?
Oh, yes.
Where you knew you'd be out of there in an hour and 45 minutes because he just, that's just what he does. But give them something because the games are kind of long. And as you, as Rich has demonstrated, they drag a lot too. I did not know that we have been.
Yeah, there's just nothing happening. Yeah. It's more than if it was 3 hours, but there was a lot going on. There's a lot of fun. There's hits going everywhere, and guys are running, and guys. And but unfortunately, and you know, you and I, we grew up, you know, reading Moneyball and following that sort of thing. And that was the thing, is, you know, this is the best way to win, and this is the optimal way to win. Well, now every GM, every team is smart, quote unquote, and knows that the most optimal way to win is not sack bunts and stealing bases and doing this sort of shit. It's take some walks, hit some dingers, the end. Like, and that's, unfortunately, now this is kind of the baseball we've gotten now. It right. used to be a little bit more fun when it was unique and different, when it was a few teams that said, hey, haha, we got the plan. This is how you do it. Now everybody goes, oh, yeah, that's how you do it. Now it's like, oh. Yeah.
So damn, like, it. This game is this game's a lot less fun when everybody does it. And that's another thing I was thinking about, too, is that we're looking at the fruits of Moneyball raising an entire generation of baseball players, because not now it's every MLB team. This is the current wave we're seeing now, are players that have been put through the collective MLB systems, where everybody is now preaching, taking pitches and getting deeper into counts to either hit for power or not make outs. And so now not only is every team preaching it, every team has had, you know, the better part of a decade to run entire MLB to run prospects through it, to run their players through the draft and from the draft and international signings through this maw of, you know, from short A to rookie ball to short A to long A to double A, triple A, everybody from top to bottom preaching the same thing: get deep into counts, look to take walks or hit for power. And so now it's not just enough that teams try to acquire guys that do that. They're making guys that do that. That's right. Who they're producing.
Everybody that comes to the system does that. Yeah. I mean, we saw, you know, of course, you know, the famous Yankees and the Red Sox are, of course, and those games are still like 5 hours long at a time. Those guys face each other, but we've seen with the Cubs as well. I mean, the Cubs are a very dynamic offensive team, but there's a lot of those dudes, you know, they're slow.
Anthony Rizzo,
pitches, doing that sort of thing. And name any team, name the best player on your team. Chances are the best player on your team is one of those guys who is very patient. Joey Votto is a great example of a guy who's definitely a Moneyball player, where guys get mad at him that, you know, he doesn't swing because he takes walks, and he's like, well, you know, what do you want me to do? Like,
right.
I get on base like 45% of the time. What the hell you want me to do? Just start swinging for no reason? Like, no, I'm going to get on base because that helps my team. And it's, you know, this, it's very unique because that's not something that players were really accustomed to doing when Moneyball and that sort of thing was first starting. There were guys that, no, you know, why am I going to sit there and take a walk? That's, you know, I don't play that way. I get some hits or whatever. And it used to be frowned upon, where now, you know, there are still some people that frown upon it, but you got players. Joey Votto is one of the greatest examples, where he goes, I don't care about RBIs. I care about, you know,
right,
not making outs, you know, and I'm going to instead go to first base instead of making an out. Like, sorry.
And you know what? Poor Joey Votto, too. He's cost himself a couple MVPs by playing in Cincinnati, right? Because if Joey Votto did what Joey Votto does on, I don't know, the Cubs, the Yankees, the Red Sox. I mean, how many MVPs has Mr. Votto won? I don't think it's many, right?
I don't know if he's won any, to be honest. Yeah, you'll have to look that up. I don't think he's won any.
Let's see. Joey Votto, Baseball Reference. By the way, kudos to Baseball Reference. If you are baseball nerds like Rich and I are, you've probably been to Baseball Reference. I want to let you know that they've recently redone their site, and it is now, at least on the Chrome browser, it is much faster and uses much fewer resources. So if you've kind of dreaded, and I believe Fangraphs has gotten a little bit better too.
Yeah, they have as well.
Yeah, it's they've definitely sped up the website. So if you've dreaded kind of going there for the last... I'd say the last year and a half, Baseball Reference has been really resource heavy and really slow. They've gotten a lot better at it. So props to them.
And I was very wrong, by the way. He did win. 2010. That seems like so long ago.
Yeah, but he's
young Joey.
He's never finished higher than second in the MVP voting since then, despite having OPS pluses of 155, 177, 156, oh, 125, a crappy year, 174, and 160.
Yeah.
In 158 games a year, nearly 700 plate appearances.
I think he looks at his checks and says, whatever.
Like, yeah, he makes a lot of money.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, yeah, he couldn't make that much anywhere else, but it's probably like,
right. He has some kind of anxiety disorder too, doesn't he?
I don't remember, but all I know is that he'll be 2024. He still gets 20 mil from them, or they have or a $7 million buyout. So they'll say after
full no trade protection, right?
Yes. 2018, 25 million. 2019, 25 million. 2020, 25 million. 2021, 25 million. 2022, 25 million. 2023, 25 million. And then they will mercifully say, here's $7 million. Go away. You're 40 years old. Why did we sign you this? And he will go, I don't care that I only won one MVP because
right.
I own an island now.
So. Right. It's smaller, but because, God, could you imagine what Joey Votto would earn on this market? What some team would give Joey Votto for nearly 434 on base percentage, and he slugged 550. Mm-hmm. He's not a one-trick pony. He's not just a guy that's like, oh,
he only had 97 RBIs.
Clogs of bases. Doesn't hit for power. It's like he hit 30 home runs. What do you want? What do you want from him? Hits a lot of doubles. Where does he hit a lot of his power? He hits a lot of doubles.
Yeah, he's a really good.
Really good doubles hitter. God, Joey Votto, he'd make, that's like $35 million a year right there on the open market. And you've got him in Cincinnati and he's not winning MVPs. But Rich, shifting gears here, we're talking about MVPs. What's going on in the NBA? I mean, is there really a discussion that Russell Westbrook isn't going to be the NBA MVP?
I guess you could, I mean, it depends what your definition of, you know, MVP is. Mm. You know, some people take it as the pure value of you know, take player X off of this team, and what do they do? And that sort of thing. When you look at that context, Russell Westbrook, it's hard not to argue with him because he does literally everything for his team. Like, he's got the, you know, 42.1 usage percentage, usage rate this year, which is first among starters and actually is the highest of all time right now.
Oh, geez.
John, the next closest is Kobe Bryant, 38.7 in 2005-2006.
Oh my God, even peak Kobe wasn't this bad at, like, no, I'm getting...
Nobody has had over 40% usage. Westbrook has 42.1 this year. So he is literally doing everything for his team right now. When he's not on the court, the team falls apart. But the argument that some people make is, well, even when he's there, they're not very good. And that could be one of the arguments that you make where you look at other guys and you look at James Harden, who's been in the mix from the beginning of this year, bringing the year as well. Guy's doing a lot on the court, production's there, and his team's winning. His team is very good. Kevin Durant was there for a while as well because, of course, he was on the best team, and he was, you know, arguably the most valuable player on that best team, even more valuable than Steph Curry or Draymond.
Say it isn't so.
Well, Kevin Durant's your lead team.
Yeah, I think the writing was on the wall.
Pretty damn good. Yeah. Like, that's, yeah, which is pretty, but obviously he's hurt, so he's probably out of it, that running now, and then you're left with another guy who sort of emerged as of late, and that's Kawhi Leonard, who, you know, of course, he's on the Spurs, so everybody kind of forgets about him because he's on the Spurs, and everybody kind of forgets about the Spurs, which, you know, quietly, once again, they've emerged as one of the NBA's elite teams. They're 49-13 right now. They have the second best record in the league. May pass up the Warriors. I'd say pretty likely that they will pass up the Warriors for most wins in the league when it's all said and done. They have the sixth best offensive rating. That's points per 100 possessions. The top defensive rating, so the least amount of points per 100 possessions allowed. And then a 7.75 SRS, which is a basketball reference stat for individual team seasons or whatever. And that's second to only the Warriors and ranks top 40 for single season SRS in league.
So they've played good teams and beaten good teams. That's what SRS measures, right?
Yeah, strength of schedule, you know, a bunch of different stuff that goes in there. But yeah, it basically is,
You'll be able to tell a bum slaying team from
If they have a bunch of wins and their SRS is low, it's like, well, they played a pretty, you know, a bunch of different factors. But the SRS tells you that team is pretty damn good. You go through the SRS of all time, and most of those teams are teams that won titles or at least made it to the NBA Finals. So it's definitely a good measure there. But so you have the Spurs being, you know, great again, and then it's the question of, okay, well, the Spurs' best player is Kawhi Leonard, and Kawhi Leonard's having an awesome year. And, you know, in the last week, people are starting to say, oh, I don't know, maybe Kawhi Leonard should be in this discussion a little bit. So I guess, John, I'll ask you, in your mind, NBA MVP, the way you vote for it, do you vote as some people do? Who's the best player on the best team, or who's, you know, one of the standout players on one of the best teams? Doesn't necessarily have to be the quote unquote best team, but the best player on a really good team, one of the top, you know, three teams or whatever, a team that can contend for the NBA championship. Or is it who's value, you know, quote unquote value, right, in terms of take that guy off the team and they're a wreck. But then, you know, in the Westbrook thing, you know, they're a middling team with him. It's like, well, if they lost him, yeah, they'd probably win, you know, 12 games or whatever, but they're only winning, you know, a handful more than that with him. So it's interesting because I think Westbrook has got the best case of anybody, but I'm starting to listen to this Kawhi Leonard thing a little bit.
That's true, because I did a little search here. Kawhi Leonard, among starters who average at least 25 minutes per game, Kawhi Leonard is leading the league in win shares per 48, and it's like not even close. Like, yeah, Kevin Durant's behind him at 276, and then the next highest is Chris Paul at 262. And you're right, Kawhi Leonard has amassed one of the near best, you know, seasons. But for me, for my voting, for my money, I like, it's kind of like a hybrid VORP, or value over replacement player, or wins above replacement player. The idea being that, okay, not that if you take this guy away from this team, how does he do? It's that if you take this guy and put him on a team of nobodies, of just blank create a players in NBA 2K, if you take Russell Westbrook versus Kevin Durant versus Chris Paul, and they do what they do, you have to assume they're going to put up what they've done. I think Russell Westbrook makes your team of nobodies, your team of guys with bad cornrows and like odd headbands that you get from randomly generating NBA 2K17 rookies.
Guys are the worst.
Yeah, like guys that are just like kind of just not good but not bad. They're just kind of bleh. And he makes that team, I think, better than anybody just based off of what he does and how good he does everything. But Kawhi Leonard also does everything really well. I mean, he's also a really good defender, and he's better at defending his position than I think Russell Westbrook. I just think that Westbrook is so far and away an offensive weapon and the prime offensive weapon in the NBA. I've got to give it to him. And I think that, and it may be a little bit old school, it may be a little stupid of me, a little not nerdy enough, but I've got a thing for triple doubles. And I just think that it's so cool that he is amassing a dominant season. I see a triple double as a dominant performance, and he is amassing enough of them that it is becoming something unlike we haven't seen in the last, let's see, what, 30 years. We haven't seen something like what Russell Westbrook is doing. He is an odds-on favorite to average an honest-to-God triple-double. And I think that deserves an MVP, if nothing else. I don't care that his team is middling. I don't care that there are guys that are better defenders at their position, at more prime positions, of which Kawhi Leonard is certainly one. I think that if you average a triple-double and you are as good as you are as what Russell Westbrook has been for his team, I got to give you the MVP. I mean, is that wrong of me? Is that bad?
No, I don't think so, because you look at some of the raw stats here. Player efficiency rating, Russell Westbrook is tops in the league at 29.8. Kawhi Leonard's right behind him at 28.6. James Harden, who we mentioned before, he's fourth at 27.6. And then you have Anthony Davis at 27.3. He's in the five. And there's Kevin Durant there at third as well, but I don't think he's going to be in there anymore because he's hurt. Box plus minus, another stat that you can check out on Basketball Reference if you want to get an idea of kind of what calculates it and what goes into it. There you have Russell Westbrook, tops again, 14.3. James Harden is second, 10.1. Then you have Chris Paul, 9.0. Kawhi Leonard is fourth, 8.3. And then LeBron James, who we didn't talk about, 8.2. LeBron is actually but people won't vote for him because it's kind of that Jordan thing where people just get bored of voting for the same guy for MVP. So he's like, hey, I'm doing really good. They're like, yeah, shut up, go away. He's like, all right, fine. But like Jordan had a few of those years where he's like, I'm still really good. And they're like, yeah, Barkley's better. He's like, right. He's not. But like, it's just you get bored of voting the same guy. It's like, ah, go. You don't need it again. You're good. You got it.
Like, you've got a couple and you've got an NBA championship now. So
yeah, you're good.
Up.
Just sit in the corner now. You're done. He's like, all right, well, I mean, when I'm off the court, my team completely implodes on itself. But all right, that's fine. Like, you know, in terms of the award, I probably should. But you know, so yeah, LeBron will not win it just because everyone's bored of voting for him. So whatever. But he's got an arguable case as well. And then valuable replacement player, as Basketball References VORP here. Russell Westbrook, 9.0. James Harden, second, 7.1. Giannis Antetokounmpo. Giannis,
wow.
5.6. Yeah, he's emerging. 22 years old, too. That's I mean, that dude is going to be insane. He's 22.
He's 22, 7 feet tall, has the handles of a point guard.
He's playing point guard. He's playing point guard this year, too.
And he defends. What is his defensive numbers? I got to look. I got to find him here on the.
I don't know what it actually is on. I just know that, like, you put a shot up within 40 feet of him and he blocks.
He's got a 104 defensive rating, which is not bad. Compared to his 118 offensive rating.
Yeah, yeah.
But. So, geez. Yeah, I did not know he was having that good of a season. But
yeah, I really didn't either until I brought this. I was like, oh boy, okay. Then LeBron James, 5.5, he's fourth. And then Kawhi Leonard is 5.0. So Leonard doesn't jump out at those stats necessarily quite as much as a Russell Westbrook does. But there's also the idea, too, that, you know, what, Leonard doesn't play that many minutes because he plays on a, you know, with a coach that's smart enough to know, hey, we got this game in the bag. Sit your ass down. Who cares? Mm-hmm. We're going to win this game anyway. Whereas Russell Westbrook is like, you cannot leave because the second you leave, our team is awful. So don't ever go away. And you have the ball every single second that you want. So.
Right. Yeah, it's, you know, are you keen, Rich, are you keen on giving it to Kawhi? I mean, I wouldn't be mad at you if you gave it to Kawhi. No, I'll say that.
I want to give it to Westbrook. I would give it to Westbrook because I think what he's doing needs to be rewarded, but... Yeah, you know, no, I'm going Westbrook. He's still my pick, but I can see the argument for Leonard, and I'll be interested to see how the next few months go for Leonard as well, to see, you know, if he continues to do stuff and he continues to, because he's a great offensive player too. I mean, people kind of undermine him by being like, oh yeah, he's a great two-way player, and it's like, no, he's a really fucking good offensive player
right.
too. Like, people always forget that when they're like, oh, he's really good at defense. He's a good two-way player. It's not like the guy's averaging, you know, 15 points a game and really good defense. The guy's averaging a ton of points mm-hmm. and is a super efficient, great scorer as well. So. He deserves his credit there, but yeah, I'm still voting Westbrook
okay.
I think at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's just something about the maybe it's novelty, but when I see, by the way, right now Westbrook at 30 points, 5 assists and 2 rebounds, as they just begin the second half in his game against the Blazers.
As they begin the second half.
Yeah, he's at 30 points, 5 assists and 2 rebounds.
Are they losing by 15 as usual?
No, they're up by 6, 69-63.
Oh, there you go.
Look
all
at
right,
that.
All right.
And Russell Westbrook is on the court because he's got to be. Because yeah, he can't get sick, he can't get hurt, he can't get tired. He's got to do everything. They're going to make the playoffs, right? I mean, they might.
Yeah, they're not. You know, I think seventh seed right now, or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they'll sneak up and get the sixth seed or whatever. But that's probably, you know, the high end for them. But yeah, that's and people bring that up. You know, 35 wins isn't necessarily, you know, would I give my most valuable player to a guy on a team that won 35 games? Like, some people have a hang up with that, and I get it. I actually do get that argument.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's basketball, of course, is a different game than say baseball where.
Right, where Joey Votto can't control that his team sucks. And he's like, well, I gum up like once every 4 times. I don't know what you want me to do. Like,
right. I mean, there is a lot more that a Kawhi Leonard or Russell Westbrook or LeBron James can do than a Chris Bryant or, you know, like we said, Joey Votto. So, you know, I wouldn't begrudge anybody that wants to give it to Kawhi or, I don't know, who else is on this list. I mean, even, Jesus, James Harden, of course.
Yeah, he's a definite contender, too. I would not be surprised if James Harden wins.
Yeah, I don't know. I like the triple-double novelty. It's something that I've got to, I don't know, maybe it's a bugaboo of mine. Maybe it's something I've got to get over.
You're just a mark. You're a mark for the triple-doubles, and it's okay. We all
right?
are.
Right? It's just so cool. It's just, it's awesome. It's just, it's a form of dominance in basketball. I mean, what would be, it's like hitting for the, would you, is it a hitting for the cycle comp? It's not that rare, hitting for the cycle, but maybe 2 home runs, 3 home runs in a game. Going 3 for 3 with 3 home runs, something like that. I mean, it's hard to find a comp of dominance that equates to a triple-double in basketball, and I just think that somebody who's able to do it so well, in part because...
And awesome triple-doubles, too. It's not just, like, sneaking by with 10 points. Or I mean, it's like 30, you know,
right, 30,
45 points.
15 rebounds yeah, right, and 12 exactly, assists. Yeah. And he's like, all right. Like, he gets to the finish line of the game, like, the 48th minute clicks off, and then the horn sounds. He's like, oh my God. I've just done everything for my team. I think... that should be rewarded, even though, you know, they're probably not long for this playoff world. As we head into the home stretch, let's see how long we've been doing this crap-ass show. About an hour. There's a story Rich and I wanted to get to, really breaking away from actual sports, but I think this is an odd story in that it has the ability to actually impact the sports that we watch every day, particularly the NBA. is that ESPN is rumored to be heading towards some serious layoffs, dealing primarily from their on-air talent department. So there will be, as rumors reports by Outkick the Coverage, nearly $100 million in on-air talent might go by the wayside from ESPN. This is from Outkick the Coverage. Quote, 2 years ago, ESPN cut several hundred behind-the-scenes jobs to save hundreds of millions of dollars in yearly costs. Since that time, ESPN subscriber losses have accelerated, averaging over 3 million lost subscribers a year. Now new job cuts are coming, only this time you're likely to know some of the casualties. Outkick has heard from a variety of different sources that ESPN is cutting up to $100 million in on-air salaries. The cuts will come via buyouts and expiring contracts that won't be renewed when those layoffs start becoming apparent. Many will recognize that what Outkick has been waiting for a couple years now, ESPN is in a world of trouble and doesn't know how to stem a rapidly collapsing business model. ESPN's collapse is the biggest story in sports, yet most haven't realized it. Over the past couple years, ESPN has lost over 13 million cable and satellite subscribers. Given that each subscriber pays ESPN in the neighborhood of $7 a month for the network, that's over $1 billion a year in lost revenue that will never be recouped. And these losses aren't stopping. Indeed, every single day in 2017, ESPN is losing 10,000 subscribers or more. At the same time that ESPN has been hemorrhaging subscribers, the network has also been paying incredible sums of money for live sports rights. In fact, ESPN will pay out $7.3 billion for sports rights in 2017. That's more than any company in America will pay for media content. That sounds like a whole heck of a lot of trouble for ESPN. You're hemorrhaging cash, you're losing subscribers, and your cost of acquiring media rights is increasing, not decreasing, and you've got a huge cash flow issue. That seems like a big problem, like really big. I mean, now we know why Chris Berman's retiring, for one.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. And I guess that's going to be the strategy we're going to see a little bit from ESPN, you know, in the near future, is not necessarily names that you know hosting that. Maybe their idea is, okay, we're paying these guys a lot of money, but do they really mean a whole lot? Does a Scott Van Pelt really matter all that much? Or can we just throw any Yahoo in front of that camera and have him throw it as sports highlights, and that's all we really need? And not necessarily need the personalities, because as we, you know, we grew up with ESPN being a lot about those personalities, your Dan Patricks, your Keith Olbermans, your, you know, those sort of guys that were your kind of voices and your pillars of that network. Now more and more, and I wonder if that's what we're going to see with the, you know, these layoffs and stuff, and this idea that, hey, we can't pay, you know, because we're not going to be able to get out of this NBA contract. We can't just tell the NBA to go away or, you know, whatever. We can't get out of this. The one way they can really cut costs is that on-air talent. And I wonder if that becomes a thing then is let's just get, you know, maybe just, you know, not pay. But one thing too, and as I'm kind of talking through this in my head, I wonder if we're going to start seeing a lot less of the, you know, talking head sports figures on these shows. Cause I got to imagine I can't imagine like your third string sports center guy is that commanding big of a contract versus your Curt Schillings or whatever. I don't know. He's not there anymore, but of the past, like those guys where you'd have to cut to the, you know, let's have Herm Edwards, you know, say some stupid shit about the NFL, like maybe then you don't need that anymore. Maybe you could just have two guys talk.
Right. Maybe you don't need four guys on Monday Night Countdown.
Exactly. Right. Where you don't need Ditka out there. You don't need those stupid guys. Cause those are probably commanding a lot of the money. So maybe ESPN, and I'd welcome that change. Cause I hate that. I hate the, like, let's cut to these four guys saying generic shit about their sport they used to play. That doesn't do much for me. I would pay more to watch, you know, those personalities, your Dan Patrick, those sort of guys, the hosts that have the personalities. Scott Van Pelt, I love what he does with sports.
Yes.
Puts his own little touch on it as well. Losing him, I think, would be a bigger deal than losing bleeding brain, you know, old athletes just spouting generic crap.
Right. You know? And you know what? They're going to cut redundancies. Like one place I see it, and I honestly see it, is, you know, you have Mel Kiper Jr. and who's the other guy? Todd McShay?
Todd McShay, yeah, yeah.
Do you really need two guys to take money from prospects and agents to move them up draft boards? Right. Which is what Mel Kiper was caught doing. I'm not making crap up.
What are you talking
up.
About?
No,
really?
Mel Kiper was definitely caught doing that.
No,
I'm not making, you know.
No, no.
But, I mean, do you really need two of those guys? Right? You can cut one of them loose. And what does a Mel Kiper Jr. make? He's got to make $500,000 a year, or at least somewhere around there. So there you go. You can cut a couple hundred grand right off the bat just by cutting out redundancies, cutting out the multiple bleeding brains talking about the NFL. You only need one bleeding brain. I mean, how many God, they bring out so many different guys. Like, this is our linebacker's specialty, or who's their guy? The guy that came back from that horrible stroke via
Teddy Bruschi.
Yeah,
right?
Teddy Bruschi. They bring out all the time. Then they've got Keyshawn. Then they've got who else is the other? All of them. And it's like, okay, well, you've got all these guys, and you've got all this. Look at us; we can tackle content from so many different ways. And so, yeah, I don't think anybody's really, you know, interested in that anymore, and it's costing you a lot of money to put it on. Is there any kind of content that ESPN puts on anymore that you like? I mean, I'll watch SportsCenter.
Yeah. That,
but I want to see more sports cuts. I don't want to see more John Buchergross and who's their hockey guy who does...
Oh, Barry Melrose.
Yeah, Barry Melrose. Party, Melrose's Cafe or whatever they do, Melrose Bistro.
Yeah, I honestly, I've stopped watching ESPN in general because, you know, I used to watch because, hey, here's, you know, my recap of the day in sports or whatever, and that used to be cool. You know, I'd wake up and at night I would watch it too. Hey, here's everything that happened, you know, in the day. You don't really get that anymore. Now you turn it on and it's like, here's something that happened. Now let's go to, you know, Stephen A. Smith, or not Stephen A. Smith, of course, but oh no, he still does some stuff. Yeah. But let's go to, you know, this
let's
guy.
Let's go to Bob Lee. Let's go
it.
To Bob Lay. Yeah, you know, exactly. Some outside the lines vignette that takes 25 minutes and it's okay.
And they do those sort of things. Yeah. They do those pieces. They do the, you know, let's everybody sit at a table and argue about a topic, and I choose one side and you choose another side, and your side's wrong and my side's right. And that sort of thing. And they've done so much more of that. And you know, I'm not alone, I guess, in people that have said, you know, I don't really want to watch this. I watched it because I want sports highlights. I don't need argue shows. I don't need guys arguing. I don't need ex, you know, NFL guys telling me, you know, very generic stuff about the NFL and saying the word football every four, you know, words. You know, that doesn't do much for me. And it, apparently it's not doing much for anybody else either. Yeah. So, yeah, I watch for the games. You know, if a game's on ESPN, I'll watch it. I'll watch some of the pregame shows. But I really don't watch SportsCenter much anymore because, you know, I'll watch the Van Pelt one because I think that's entertaining. But you know, the morning Sports Center I used to watch religiously, and I just don't anymore because I probably see four or five game highlights in the half hour I have to watch.
Yep.
And the rest of it is, you know, here's, you know, Herm Edwards at a desk talking about something and getting interviewed by somebody.
Like, show me
the
games.
Care.
Like,
yeah, I don't care what Herm Edwards had to say.
There are times where, especially during the NFL season, well, they'll jump 20 points in the score. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. What the hell happened here? I want to see that touchdown. I want to see that interesting stuff. But they'll just, you know, it'll be Chris Berman. You know, so we jump ahead here, and there's I don't know why he's turning into Joel Quenneville. I don't have a good Berman on.
It's probably good that you don't have a good Berman
on tap. Yeah, but it'll jump ahead, and it's like, okay, we jump ahead in the game, and it's now 25-34. It's like, well, wait, it was just 14-10, so we jumped 30 points collectively. How do I know which team is where in the context of the game? I mean, it used to be when I would watch SportsCenter on Saturday, you would watch highlights, and the highlights would last a couple minutes at least. Now it seems like they get through them as quickly as possible so that they can get through to the Coors Light cold hard facts, or the Slim Jim sponsored this, or the, you know, by the new movie that's coming out, and the new Disney movie that's coming out, and da 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 da. And it's, you know, and I think the other problem is too is that we're seeing now just how much their subscriber numbers and revenue were propped up by people just having Comcast or Time Warner or DirecTV to choose from. Because when you can only choose between those companies to get TV, and you, ESPN, have paid to be included in the base subscription of all those companies, right, of course your subscriber numbers are going to look ridiculous. And now we're finding out that with the advent of cord cutting, we're finding out that a lot of people can live without SportsCenter because it wasn't a part of their daily lives. And, you know, maybe SportsCenter will explore a monthly thing, you know, a monthly $4 or $5 to get ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News. But I don't expect a lot of people to do that. How many people really love sports that much that they've got to watch all the time? They've got to have it on their tablet, have it on their phone with them at all times. I just don't see those people.
It's so easy to curate exactly what you want in terms of highlights now too, because hey, I only care about the NBA. I'll go to youtube.com/NBA. I'll go to NBA.com and you know, get all the highlights right there right now. Or I'll just have Twitter open during the game and they're showing me the highlights as they're happening. Mm-hmm. Or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, or even the next day you go and it they're nice, compact, you know, click this video and here you go, where you don't necessarily need ESPN to say, hey, here are all the games that happened yesterday, where you can just go to NFL.com and watch the highlights if you want. You can do that sort of stuff. So it's so much easier now to do what they do. And they really have to, I guess, figure out what it is that they do now and what they are going to do in the history. Because are they just going to be a highlight show? Are they just going to be guys arguing with each other? I don't know. They're in a weird spot right now. And
I think they have a few shows. Yeah. I think they have a few shows that are pretty cheap. I think, not outside the lines. What's the one with Tony Reale? You know the one I'm talking about.
Oh, Pardon the Interruption. Right, is that Pardon the Interruption? No. What's,
the one before.
What the hell? Around the Horn.
Around the Horn. I think Around the Horn is pretty cheap. I don't think Tony Reale can command all that much, and then the people that are on it...
Says you, no, yeah.
Well, I mean, I like Tony Reale. I like him.
No, I do too, but he probably doesn't make... he's probably not making five...
Right.
Five bills.
Jesus, but he is a good-looking man, though. Oh, man,
if I
looked that good, like, I would not... I would be doing other things that, you know, not be... Because he was Kornheiser's little manservant for a while, wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just like a little intern or something like that. Yeah.
And then they were like, holy crap, you look like a GQ model. All right, get you in front of a camera, good sir. I mean, I think that's pretty cheap. I think Dan Lebatard's show that he does with his old man, oh God, what's the name of it? I love the show, but I forget the name of it for the life of me all the time. I think that's a pretty cheap show to produce, but... Pardon the Interruption with Tony Kornheiser and Michael Wilbon? Like, how much are those guys making? That might go away. And you might also see a lot of ESPN radio affiliates go by the wayside as well. Because ESPN radio is a big part. Like, they pay a lot of talent, a lot of money to put on radio shows.
Right, right, right.
And that radio's not doing too well right now. And it may not be worthwhile to pay guys... in whatever it is they are paying them that much money when you can find, I mean, you can find any big voiced kid out of Syracuse and give him $100,000 and he'll do a show anywhere you want, right? I mean, you just go on and do big Syracuse voice guy. Well, talk about sports and do all the things we do. So it's going to be a changing landscape for ESPN. But the one thing I'm wondering is not now, obviously, because as you mentioned, they're locked into the contracts, but at some point, ESPN, I was combining ESPN and Disney, ESPN propped up by Disney is no longer going to be there to offer to outbid the other competitor for $500 million for the NFL contract. So are we going to see other sports leagues, do you think? I mean, I think we will hurt a little bit by ESPN maybe being phasing out of the content rights game, right? The live sports.
It'll be a big deal. Yeah, that's probably a bigger discussion because, yeah, we're seeing more and more of even TV rights in general of, you know, YouTube TV just announced, you know, last week that they're launching. Mm-hmm. You know, you got PlayStation View and Slingbox and everybody's getting closer and closer to the a la carte cable that everybody keeps saying. That's what I want. I want a la carte. And eventually, you know, these cable companies and a lot of people have to say, hey, look, if this is what our subscribers want, we have to give them that. And when you do that, you're really hurting the sports leagues. You're really hurting the teams because, you know, the whole, you know, my bill and your bill, we all pay for the, you know, whatever stupid network mm-hmm. we get. And, you know, there are a lot of people, you know, everybody in Chicago pays for Comcast Sportsnet. Not everybody in Chicago wants Comcast Sportsnet.
No.
Not everybody in Chicago cares to watch Comcast Sportsnet.
Mm-hmm.
So there'd be a lot of people that are going to go, no, I don't really want Comcast Sportsnet. And boom, there you go. Now Comcast Sportsnet ceases, you know, probably a quarter of the subscribers it currently has, quote unquote subscribers, you know, forced subscribers.
Right.
And then where are those teams? Because teams buy into those regional networks. Teams buy into their own networks. You know, the Angels have their own network in LA. Well, if, you know, a quarter of those people go, I don't really give a shit about the Angels anymore, the Angels' entire business model changes. So it's this smoking gun that a lot of people are not really talking about, but ESPN could be the first one to fall. And when they fall, everyone's going to fall, and it's going to be a hard, hard fall. And I don't know, you know, what happens.
I mean, it's going to be, we might see a return to the Bill Wirtz days where he has his own, he wants to create his own TV network, but he doesn't want to negotiate. He doesn't want to sell bottom dollar to the local cable networks. And so might just go off the air. Teams with their own network might just go off the air for a little bit because once ESPN goes and so many people go a la carte, they might not have the revenue base built in to continue to operate that way. And they might not want to sell to Sling TV or YouTube TV or Roku or whoever else or PlayStation View, they might not want to sell bottom dollar to get their feed right onto the network. And so they're just going to go off the air for a little bit. So you'll only be able to watch them for free over the air. It's going to be an interesting time. You know what? I'm really interested to see how ESPN looks as these layoffs start to phase in. It's reported to take like it's going to take out. Take as long as like the contracts are going to take, so it won't be immediate. It's not like there's going to be like people handed pink slips at the coming off the 5 p.m. Sports Center where it's like, all right, thanks for that shift, you're fired, by the way, get the hell out of here. But over the next year and a half, we might see a much different Sports Center. And the good news is that ESPN is still going to want to churn out content. So if you're a young content sports content maker,
yeah,
you know, You might have a little bit more of a shot now because ESPN isn't paying top dollar to people who aren't really giving top dollar content. So it could be a lot of interesting. It's something to keep an eye on and be cognizant of as you consume sports, because this could spell problems for many other people. Rich, is there anything you wanted to get to before we get out of here?
No, I think that's it. That's it. All I got on my docket. So.
We had a long show today. For Rich Krejci, I'm John Playtech. We thank you for listening. Be sure to go to Team Snap. The spring is near, and that means summer sports leagues will be out in the full force this year. Take the hassle out of captain duties and use Team Snap. I know plenty of people that run many different fantasy sports leagues, especially during the summer. You got that keeper league going, and you're trying to remember, oh God, where do I have Joey Votto? On which team do I have Joey Votto? Or, oh God, in this keeper league, should I draft Yon Mankata in this keeper league? Or is that in the other league that I've got that's rolling over? Oh my God, Team Snap's got you covered. Download their mobile app and you can get started today at teamsnap.kandpshow.com. Again, that's teamsnap.kandpshow.com. Team Snap, the smartest and easiest way to manage your team this season. Of course, Ticket Network as well. Go to ticketnetwork.kandpshow.com for all your ticket needs this spring and summer. That's ticketnetwork.kandpshow.com. For Rich Krejci, I'm John Playtech. Thank you for listening. We will catch you next time. We're out. Bye.